Brennan?
Hi. Can you talk?
Yeah.
Okay, there, I can hear you.
Okay, good, good. There's a familiar face.
Yeah, I've been, it's Alfonso the Drip on Discord.
Where does the name come from?
I needed a new username and it was the first thing that came to mind. And I was like, oh, I kind of like the ring of that.
Alfonso the Drip.
Yep.
Well, I'm glad it's fun. I like the open studio room in the Discord because I remember faces sometimes easier than names.
Definitely.
And so it's fun to see a familiar face and now to get a chance to hear your story. So tell me about yourself.
Yeah. Okay. So I've actually last week I saw that you had a space open.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know what to talk to him about. Right. So I kind of was just like, I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to take the spot and I'm just going to sit and think about it. And then I found it again. So I was like, okay, I think I have a way to go, because if I go from like my story, it's like, it's a very fractured story. Like I have a hard time. I couldn't tell you about me in a meaningful way in 2 hours probably, right? So it's like the intricacies have just been building on each other, and so I get lost in the maze as I'm going to mm-hmm. explain it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I can give some sort of background. Like I grew up with a single mom, mm-hmm. and there was visits with my dad. Mm-hmm. And I used to see him on the weekends, and then there were a lot of issues there, so that ended up breaking apart, mm-hmm. and I made the decision not to see him anymore. And then I used to go to my my grandpa's house on the weekends. That was in about grade 3 when that happened, mm-hmm. and so I used to see my grandpa every weekend, and so there was I could dig in there, but I'll keep going. And so
it's clear. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot there. I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah, I just I was living in the city, and we were not living in I'm from Manitoba.
Okay.
And I was living in the major city there, Winnipeg, and we were living in it's the north end. It's not the not a good part of the city.
Okay.
So what ended up happening is my mom had met a guy. And when I was about 12, we moved to a small town south, about an hour south, and it went from the city and kind of like hoodlums, I guess you could use, and then it went to like Mennonite Southern Baptist, about 3,500 people, 15 churches, and my mom wasn't a very religious person, but she was I want you to have the option, right? She wanted me to be able to make the decision for myself. And just because it was such a religious town, one of our main ways of hanging out as together as groups is that you would go to the youth groups. And so that was my first, I guess, real interaction within it was a very I guess you use the term charismatic. Mm-hmm. It's a very charismatic. I definitely I thought it was powerful. You get the tingles, and I think that we had a really good preacher or pastor, I'm not sure the proper term, but he moved people. He moved the group, right? You felt it.
Yep.
And that was really nice. But it was more of an avenue to hang out. And then it kind of left these ideas dancing in my head. And then because everybody that I knew there was very religious, then it made, it wasn't easy to speak out, I guess. But you have conversations, and looking back now, they were propositional conversations. Mm-hmm. So they didn't really get anywhere to the heart of it, because the frames were separate. So it was often there wasn't an appreciation for either frame within the conversation with my friends. So it was you're way outside of this, and you're not thinking about this, right? And so I'm okay, well, well, this doesn't make any sense to me. This seems like a silly kind of story. And so like my, I guess my nail on the coffin of sorts, looking like I'd kind of, how do I, Jesus sacrificing himself, didn't seem necessarily like a sacrifice to me if he ended up going back to heaven, right? So it didn't, where's the sacrifice? Mm-hmm. There's a much, 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 much deeper point that I'm just starting to scratch at with that.
Yep.
And it's
very, it's a very reasonable, it's a very reasonable take on the, what he's on the cross for a few hours and he gets to go to heaven instead of 33 years of muddling around in this difficult planet.
Yeah.
Where's the sacrifice? It's a very reasonable response.
Yeah. It's just kind of, and it was like a placeholder, you know, good enough. Yep. I can set this aside. And I hadn't like given it much thought. And there's like in my household, there is a certain animosity to religious thinking as such, because my parents felt that they had to defend themselves against the position in order to move forward, right? And then the groups end up melding together on their defenses. So you're like, so I call them like they're handshakes, right? They're like ideological handshakes in a sense. It's like, do you fit into my group? Do you say the right thing when I ask this question? And then you can be like, yeah, you're in, right? You understand. And so when
that's really good. I'm gonna steal that. That's really good. I like that.
And so like so when you're willing to kind of step back and be like, okay, well there's other terms, it can, you're kind of poking people in their axioms, right?
Yep.
There's a lot of emotional conflict that you can potentially have to deal with through that, but it's been useful. And so I've been like Peterson. I found Peterson, like his, like I think I'd seen the Suspender video, and then he had like his first interview with Rogan. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of just like rabbit hole. Like I rabbit hole huge. I watch most of his videos, like all of his interviews and everything, just like all in, right?
Yep.
Read his books. It was big.
Yep.
And I every time I tried to look back at it, I wasn't sure what happened. I couldn't, it was like, no, he wasn't telling me just things that I already knew, and he wasn't, but it, there was a, I was listening to the Open Studio, I think, and Sherry had mentioned like that he was like inspiring, and I kind of realized that I didn't have a concept of inspiration for my movement forward. I didn't put forth that I was just inspired. I was just lost in a trance of following and digging and going, and it's like, what are you doing? And it's like, well, like you've been inspired. And I thought that was really useful, because he inspired me like in a lot of really deep ways.
Yeah.
And like, because where I was sitting before that is before I graduated my grade 12 year, I got like hit with a depression. Like it runs in my family. Mm. On like a biological level, like two of my older family members have committed suicide. My mom is on medication. Yeah. One of my uncles has his own ways of dealing with, like it's very pervasive. And so like I remember being hit by it, and I was like, something's off. This was kind of even before I knew that it was like running as deep as it was and understand, but I knew something was off. And I tried to talk to my counselor at school. Like I never really talked to him, but I kind of was like, hey, something like shifted, but I still have, I'm just kind of like going through the motions. There's nothing there.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, like, I don't really know how to help you, but if you can go through the motions, keep going.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, fine. But like, it didn't really go away. And then when I graduated, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. But like, it's always been like, you know, you're a smart kid, you're gonna go to school, and you're gonna like, do that.
Yep.
And so it was like, okay, well, then let's go to school. And I was like, well, what am I going to school for? Yeah. And so and it was like, well, I'm smart. So I was like, dentistry. I was like, we're gonna go for dentistry. Like, teeth are cool, I guess. And it was just what I picked. And I've always been someone who like procrastinates. Mm-hmm. And then like when it goes, you can do it. Like there was one moment in grade six, we had like a volunteer teacher, and he was like giving this project, and he gave us a lot of time on the project, and I was just not doing it. 'Cause I was like, I can whip this bad boy out. No yeah. time.
Yeah.
And like, he was giving me like a hard time, and like, he started like making like a joke about it through like the class of this guy not doing it. And I was like, I'll show you guys. And like, I ended up getting like the highest mark in the class, and he was a little bit upset about it, but it's just like your life, right? It's what you yeah. deal with. And
yeah.
so like,
yeah.
so
yeah.
these ideas get supplanted in you. And so the procrastination, like, I always had a way of like getting it. Like, there was a time to buckle down, and when you buckle down, you buckle down. Right.
Yep.
I stopped caring that that there was nothing that wasn't there anymore. It was gone. I didn't care. I was sitting in bed awake, just like on my computer for like 8 hours a day, just watching things go by.
Yep.
And like, so, and like, I was in class, or I wasn't in class. I was enrolled into my classes, and I wasn't going to my classes.
Yeah.
And I just like you realize something's wrong.
Yeah.
And so like, I kind of like, I reached out to my parents, and I was like, hey, something's like really not right here. I think I need yeah. to go like talk to someone.
Yeah.
And so like, I was, so I went and talked to my doctor, and I got put on medication, mm-hmm. like an SSRI.
Yeah.
And I didn't like what it was doing.
Yeah.
And so we went on, put on another one.
Yeah.
And I didn't like the effects of that. And yeah. so I just kind of stopped taking it. Mm-hmm. Just like I couldn't deal with the effects, and I could still operate
yep.
to whatever I could.
Yep.
And there was a shift when like I took like mushrooms, like psychedelics.
Okay. Yep.
And it wasn't the mystical experience that shifted. It was like, because like, I've had certain mystical experiences, and they're different from what happened. Mm-hmm. And like, so what sort of happened is an opening of like being able to conceptualize a positive way of looking at the world. Like, mm-hmm. like existence itself became enough. It was like, we're here, we're doing it. This is it. And like, it energized me. And I was listening to, Frank Ocean's cover of Strawberry Swing. And so like, that song has a really, like, special meaning to me. And, but it opened this thing up to me, and I was like, okay, like, we're going to be okay. Like, we're here, you know, we're living it. And so I kind of, An interesting thing happens when you have those really powerful experiences. You have to make sense of them. Mm-hmm. And your ego tries to take it over, and to say, this was mine. Like, this was mine. And so what sort of happened is that like, I'd settled into this idea of being like content. And it was like, no matter what happens, I will be content, and I can move forward. And I was okay just like to like stay exactly how I was, whatever that means, and just be. And then Peterson came into the frame, and And it was like this whole, there's more to being, like the meaning, you can have more if you want it. And I listened to so much of him, like it hijacked a lot of my processes, because he hijacked a lot of my processes because his concepts are so much deeper and fuller than what I had at the time. And so every time I tried to enter trains, these concepts would pop in, and it was like, these are things that need to be dealt with, and there's meaning here. And how do you, what does this mean? How do I move forward? And so like, it's like, I would say that like, I'm living in like a fractured dream, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's there, like there's splits. It's not like, I'm not there. There's an inconsistency between my thoughts and actions. Right. Mm-hmm. And so there's, I'd mentioned in my write-up, like the comforts of nihilism. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like, cause I was trying to think about the contentedness is a facade. It's not real. This is mm-hmm. what I was trying to say with the ego will try to take over these powerful experiences, because I wasn't okay with existence. I was within the transcendent, and that's what made it okay. And I kind of lost my train.
You'll get it back. The contentedness is a facade, the comforts of nihilism.
Right.
You realize that, okay.
Okay. So I was trying to, yeah, it's not. So I was trying to figure out like, okay, I didn't have the comforts of nihilism. It was like, I don't care. That's a real thing for me to contend with, is like, I don't care. And that's, it's a powerful tool to put everything aside. And so it's so like I was trying to conceptualize what this kind of is, how I'm moving through the world. Because I was listening to Peugeot talk to like Rationality Rules and like those guys, and he's like, where are you standing? And that's a really useful thing to ask yourself when you're going down trails. Well, like where are you standing while you're bringing these things up? And so it's kind of it's like you're detached, and but you're still like, but you're hyper focused on something, and but it allows for a sort of haze, because you're so focused on something that you're ignoring everything else, and you can stay there. Like it's kind of like your data, like your habits are kind of like the things that you're hyper focused on, the things that you do every day, and you're not going anywhere with them. You're just doing them, and it's like, this is good. And it's like the thing is that as you go through it, and you're like, you have these inclinations of like, well, you know, maybe I should do something. And, and I don't care. Right. It gets brushed off. And the thing is that like, it's actually like what I think, like it's actually one of the beauties of being younger, is the fact that you can say I don't care, because you're sitting in so much potential. You're sitting in so much potential that you can just focus on this one area and ignore its impact on everything else. And you get to say, fine, this is good. This is good enough. I can ignore everything else. And that's helpful if you want to find something new and dig into something, because you can ignore everything else and have this hyper-focused attachment. But if it's for living your day-to-day life, it doesn't necessitate really anything. It's an abuse of the fact that you can be in so much potential and focus on these things, because because you have to be aware of the fact that the potential is going to collapse as you're moving forward. And like you, so this is like the, and it's like, okay, the, where Peterson's, do people have ideas or do ideas have people? And so these are, you have these, you're moving in a certain framework, and it's, and as you move forward through framework, is you're building something and other things are collapsing. And so like, what dream are you in, right? Where are you going? What are you doing? And so this was, and the thing that I pulled out of that problem was like, I was listening to the Peterson, like, you're oppressed. Yeah. And it's like, and he's, and it's like, bear your cross. And it's like, it's real suffering,
yeah,
to go through and to build and to like, it's real suffering to, yeah, to not just sit by and watch things go.
Yeah.
And it's hard and it's painful and it's not even totally
to care.
Yeah. And, but it's, that's like, that's, and the thing is like where I run into an issue is if I were to die tomorrow, it wouldn't, my parents wouldn't care that I didn't have a house. It's the quality of love that we've shared between each other. And so there's a part of me that wants to write off the whole building as an aside, because I can love, and why can't that be enough? But it's not enough of the picture. It's not the right frame to draw the conclusion, right? Because I actually owe something to my parents to build something of myself so that they could watch me grow.
Yes.
And you go, I've been talking for a bit.
It's been wonderful. This has been great. You know, I see this young smiling guy working in the open studio, but now this is like opening a Christmas gift. This has been a wonderful, I don't want to call it a performance because I think that belittles it a little bit, but this is really an amazing, it's hard to put your life into words. And, you know, I don't know, you know, so I had to preach on John 1 a few weeks ago, and I got to preach on John 1 again. And how am I going to get a, part of the reason I don't repeat sermons is that I get bored if I repeat the sermon. If I'm bored, everyone else is going to be bored. So, but then, you know, lectionary is the big thing right now. So do the lectionary. So what that means with the lectionary, I keep coming back to texts like John 1, and it's like, what am I going to do with John 1 this time? And so I was digging into logos and Lego in Greek, which is basically to gather. And you have done in an above average way, a gathering of your life and a powerful telling of it. And that is no small thing. And a lot of people, myself included, really struggle with that, because you had to filter through the salience, and the salience not only considers the audience, but now, and this is to me part of, and I take no credit for designing these things, because it's for the most part all the people who've come around me that have really afforded a lot of this, but the Discord and the community and the randos videos and all of this has helped you say, these are the salient parts of my story, but you integrated that so well with your story and so powerfully, and you told it very well. I couldn't be happier. This has been wonderful. And I've got a front row seat watching you do it. And it's just great. So I'm happier than a pig in mud right now, because you've done it very well. You've not had an easy life. I mean, when you started talking about, you know, I mentioned, you know, this is for me again, this intersects in my story. I just had a wonderful conversation with someone. I hope he and his girlfriend agreed to share it, because it was a powerful story and it was a great conversation. And now another good conversation. But then you start and, you know, a single mom, visits with dad, lots of issues, decision not to see your dad. And this happens around grade 3. And then a remarriage, and it sounds, and then a move from a, you know, a kind of crappy area to a smaller town, which is full of religious people and churches and youth group. I mean, I don't know how you could have done what you did better. And it was wonderful. And it was wonderful. I mean, we could land the plane right now and call it good, but I suspect there's more good stuff to have. And since we still have a half hour, I don't want to stop it now. My only question is, where do you want to go from here? I mean, you told your story very well, and you gave us a lot to chew on. And I take notes during this. You see me look down. It's because I'm typing and I'm keeping notes here, and I'm identifying possible titles for our talk. I'm doing all this at the same time while I'm listening to you. And no, this is above average conversation. And that tells me a lot about you, because again, what you just did right here is not an easy thing. And you stood up and you performed it. And you brought in many of the issues of my videos and the conversations and the not only the Bridges of Meaning Discord, but the connected other communities, the Awakening from the Meaning Crisis, and all of this stuff, and you brought it together right now. So maybe if I, you know, I'm curious now about the shape of your life right now. Are you living with parents? Are you living on your own?
I ran into issues with a friend who I was living with and also was employing me.
that can get complicated.
Yeah, well, that's what we were told every step along the way. And I stopped being able to trust him.
Yeah.
Without going into too much, I couldn't maintain a relationship without, well, I mean, like the trust was gone. He dismantled it.
Okay. And, well, where's your life going? More education, or what are you trying to figure that out? What about other relationships? I mean, where are you headed? Where do you want to go?
Well, that's like, I think I need to go back to school.
Okay.
Because that's, in terms of like having, like integrating the, like my ideas that interest me and my life, I've done a decent amount of like trade work. I've done some retail, like I've done some sales, and it doesn't hit the spot, right? You get a craving, you feel like things are missing. And so it doesn't, this means more to me than the job.
Yeah.
That's never going to change.
Yeah.
And I need to come to terms with that, but I also need to work with it.
Yep.
Because they need to be brought together for me to feel integrated. And so I think I need to go back to school. Right now I'm not working. I was working like a summer job, and the term runs out. So right now I'm on EI. And we have like COVID and everything, but
it's a hard time to find a job. I've got two daughters living at home right now, and they're looking for work, but it's not easy.
Yeah, but like it's okay. The whole not working thing doesn't, like, it has some impact because you need to fill your day.
Yep.
But it's, I'm pretty good at wasting my time with interest with things that build on itself. I don't
it's really not wasting. You're filling your time.
Exactly. It's it's they build in. I get to, like, it's my mental framework. I get to read my books. I get to watch my videos. I get to do all of these things.
Yep.
And it's So it's, but it's do you know, like, the, like, Peterson's cock-a-doodle-doo?
No.
Story.
No.
So it's when he it's a story of this man walking down the road, and he runs into this gnome, and the gnome offers him a ruby for an amount of money. And he's like, okay, well, I can't pay for the ruby, but I can give you some, and then I can keep paying it. Right. And it's this really big, heavy ruby. And so he goes on the road, and but it's really heavy, and he decides, like, as he's walking, it's really heavy, and he decides that he doesn't want to keep walking, but it doesn't really matter because he has this ruby. And and so, like, people walk by, and they have these opportunities, and they say, hey, come with me. I have these things that I want to do. And so he goes, well, like, that could be neat, but, like, I have this ruby, and I don't want to have to carry it all the way, and I think I'll be happy enough with this ruby, right? Hmm. And so this happens, like, two or three more times, until eventually this frail old man comes walking by with this big rock. Yeah. And this frail man walking by with the rock says, what are you doing just standing there with a rock? And the man says, oh, well, what do you mean, me with the rock? I have ruby, you have a rock. And they get into, like, an argument, and then eventually, like, the gnome comes out and was like, if you would have put down your prized possession for, like, just a second, you would have seen what it was.
Yeah.
And then he's like, so, like, if you want it, then you can, like, if you, now that, like, you've had these troubles, like, you know, put it down, and I will give you what you deserve. Yeah. And they put it down, and it breaks open, and a bunch of worms come out and consume them.
Oh, gosh, what a story.
Yeah. And I feel that.
Okay. So you feel that in terms of, you know, you don't want to walk around, I see this with my daughters right now too. They're both very productive, and so they're doing good things with their time. So I have absolutely no complaints about their present level of employment, because they are not wasting their time. They are filling their time with worthwhile things that I think in the future will serve them well. And so it sounds like you're doing similar things, but part of filling your time now is thinking about direction in terms of, because you clearly have aptitude, and I think you said it very well. You've worked some trades, you've worked retail. In my experience, those who go to school, I mean, I went, like many people, I went straight through, but what that means is, by the time you get to college, you don't value it. And in fact, not only don't you value it appropriately because you have no frame of reference in order to evaluate it, you also can't get the most out of it, because the truth is, just like with everything else in formal education, there's a certain amount of cruft and corruption, which if you knew a little bit more, you would sort of sidestep, and you'd actually be able to purify and perfect your education as you get it, rather than just sort of taking the default mode, which is what the student gets when they're just running through it. So you're at a position where, you know, you can afford that, and you've got some wisdom. But now what, and now we're sort of into Petersonian future authoring stuff. What do you want to see your life look like 10 years from now?
It's like, I've been kind of building it a little bit. I want a dog. I want an American Akita. That's my dog. That dog specifically is a big responsibility, because it, like, temperamentally, it can be difficult to deal with. They're a little stubborn headed. They don't necessarily get along with other animals, and they're fairly large, or other people. But that demands that I have a place with, like, an enclosed backyard, and like a place to live in. And so that's something. And
you
so like
goal.
I have to build
that's
towards
a good
that.
Thing.
Yeah. And what do I want in 10 years? I can't necessarily, I can say maybe a girlfriend or wife or kids or a house and stable job, but that doesn't mean anything. I need like it's I want to be I want to be like it's I want to I don't know how to put it aside from build a relationship with God. I want to have it at like the walking with God. What do I want in 10 years? I want to feel as though I am acting in a more integrated way that best besets my life and my interactions with that of the transcendent. And so, but that's also it's nice, but it's hard to bring it back in. It's really hard to bring it back in. Well, and because there's certain social standards that say, hey, this means you're living a good life. And well, it's so I have a pushback against that because who are you to tell me what's a good life? But at the same time, they're insanely useful markers for just like your sovereignty and ability as an individual to make his way out in the world. And so I need to start looking at it more like that into my everyday life and how my actions and how my times are being filled are going to compound towards that.
That's good. That's good. That's very, very good. You've got a real gift of summary.
Yes, I'm a summarizer, right? I'm not actually a very good thinker, believe it or not. If I sit there and it's like what like I'm not coming up with ideas every here and there. I'm listening and taking it in and seeing it and then trying to bring it back together.
But that's no small gift. And I, you know, as you just said, people have different gifts. There are some people that it's just insight, 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 and they're gold, but they're, you know, there's jewels scattered all over the lawn. And it's like, all right, what are you going to do with all those jewels scattered all over the lawn? You're on the lawnmower over that sucker and you're going to wreck it. And so it's, you know, I know it bothers the psychologist when I say something like this, but there are lots of different form. I'll say it a little different. That won't bother them so much. There's lots of different forms of smart. And so don't, and that's one thing I've learned in life. I've known people who have almost zero education, but they are smart in a lot of ways I'm not. And I mean, we are enormously complex creatures. And so everybody has a degree of giftedness, and this is part of your giftedness. And so figuring out where your gift and the world's great needs sort of meet is the challenge, and figuring out how that meets with all of these other, I mean, it's very interesting to me. Often people will say, I want to be married, I want to have a job, I want to have a home. Those will be kind of the big things people put in per you put the dog in first, and but then you connected it with, in order to have a dog like this, I'm going to need to have. And so I found that very interesting, the order that you process these things. So it's very interesting. Well, can you be more specific in terms of would you like a job that has more people or more things, or work with your hands or work with your mouth or your mind?
So I think I want to I want to go into clinical psychology, which is like I'm embarrassed to say that because of how much I like Peterson, but there's a level on which the frame fits for me. And so but I'm not sure if I'm better suited for research or for the interpersonal aspect of it. And so I'm but I don't even I like I think it's psychology related that I'm gonna go. But there's so many avenues to go down there, but I need to get into school and get a like a bachelor's, and then I need to get a like a master's or a PhD, because a psychology degree doesn't really mean anything. Yeah. But like the frustrating thing for that point is that I can't even really approach the industry until I've gone through some schooling.
Yeah.
So it leaves me at like there's a panging hunger every time I'm at a job that it's not this thing that I feel like I should be doing.
Yeah.
I just wanted to touch on one thing, like you were talking about, like the giftedness, and like, intelligence or like smarts, like it's a weird thing, because if you were by yourself as an isolated person, you wouldn't be able to tell that you were smart or stupid or anything. Right. It's a reinforcement from other people. But it's also a thing that you have to live up to. And like, this is the like Peter Sinn's, like you're going to be miserable if you don't like live up to your gifts. And so I've kind of taken them to calling them blessings, because that's kind of what they are. It's nothing that you did. It's just how you're operating. And so I'm always like trying to move the religious world into my understanding. I find it very salient to attempt to do that. And so I call like intelligence like a blessing, and something that you owe it to the world in some sense to live up to it. I have a personal-ish question for you.
Okay.
The video that you did with John and Mary that you put out yesterday, two days ago.
Yeah.
When Mary was talking about like the prepositions, and then Verveke kind of talked in about like the part whole relationship and it being functions, you started rocking yourself.
Like this?
Yeah. I was curious,
what does this mean?
What were you hit by? I was curious.
It's the prepositions are spatial. Okay. The prepositions are an attempt to turn space into grammar. And a lurking issue behind this is why I'm rocking now, because I rock when I am accessing. Well, why am I? Some psychologist could probably tell me. I don't know. I rock because certain parts of my brain are, well, how it feels to me is I'm trying to do some deep processing of something that I have not been able to get it into the left side of my brain, which is, you know, in terms of the standard template, my ability to articulate it in a somewhat definitive way, to put it into propositions, to systematize it. And so this is, I'm moving back. My wife is a Waldorf teacher, and they're all about crossing. So there's this, you know, so there's this axis, and this lines up with the two hemispheres of the brain. And so with a lot of education, they try to get kids to do things with their feet and with their hands that keep crossing that axis. And probably nobody's ever mentioned this to me before, so thank you for this, because I do it. I don't do it consciously. Probably what I'm doing is I'm taking thoughts in one side and trying to get them over to the other, or get them onto this side. And so I'm going back and forth. And so when Mary starts talking about prepositions, I'm thinking prepositions are spatial. And a big part of what's going on in this whole thing is language is so powerful and so important, but also deeply limited. And because we're doing just like you did at the beginning of this video, we're gathering all of this stuff and we're putting it into these sounds and into these words. And that's so important. But, you know, lately I've been preaching on John 1 and Logos made flesh. Well, what is the relationship between Logos and reality? And by him, all things were made. Through him, all things were made. There is nothing that has been made that has been not been made through him, you know. And so you begin, and so I've been doing a lot of thinking about the matter verse, the three dimensionality and the story verse, all of this articulation. And so then when, so when I sit down and talk to someone like John and Mary, it's really fun because, well, John is an interesting academic in that he is a full-blown, academic, but he's also, he's got more to him than that. Okay. So he's not just somebody confined to an office. And so that's really helpful. Mary is not an academic. Neither am I. I mean, I'm surrounded by books, but I keep making this point to people. I might read and think a lot, but I'm not an academic. And that is being demonstrated by what you and I are doing right now. Because I could spend these 2 hours this morning that I'm doing with conversations, I could spend that time with some books, but I kind of would rather spend it with people because, oh, that gets deep very quickly. But so, yeah. So what I'm doing, I'm listening to John and Mary, and I'm listening to an academic and someone decidedly non-academic talk. And the way the interchange is probably going to go is the way almost every interchange goes, which is someone presents a point and the other person is, you know, okay, we're practicing critical thinking. The other person is going to, their initial position is critical. And that's not necessarily comfortable interpersonally, but it's helpful because, okay, you're going to throw something at me. I'm going to test it. And so that initial, nah, is sort of a test, but that's not the end of the story. So then the person's going to push back and they're going to push against each other. And what's good about both John and Mary is that they both know how to play that game, but also aren't so stuck and closed that everything's a no, because Peterson is right. We want to keep playing the game. And so John's going to, you know, kind of discount or swat away Mary's prepositions. But Mary's, you know, if you've noticed anything about Mary, she's not going to be put off just because some academic says something. She's going to keep going at it. And then I'm pushing it back and forth in my brain, listening to them, thinking, what do I think about this? Because so often when you talk to both of these people, they both present so many new ideas that I haven't had time to think about them. And when you've got a mic in front of you and a camera in front of you, it's like, you know, stand and deliver. Try not to be an idiot. You know, try not to be a moron. And, you know, hey, I'm the, you know, Mary's religious too, but I'm the clergy in the room. So I'm the one, you know, representing the church. If John is representing the academy and Mary is representing the earth and the soil and the chickens, you know, I don't want to have the church look bad. So, you know, that's what's happening. But I haven't noticed that I do that. So that's what makes this whole thing fascinating. So thank you.
No problem.
That's what's going on. I'm not exactly sure what's going on, but I think that's probably what's going on.
Well, so this, I have this idea, from like the, it's, it has to do with like awe and terror. Ooh. And there, so like there, it's, it, that would be like the opening or the closing. Mm-hmm. And the thing is through like intense, like specifically in my experiences, like intense psychedelic experiences, these two experiences are walking hand in hand, the awe and the terror, and it's the, it could open or it could close at any moment. And so when you're I think that there's a sort of, trauma is probably not a good word. But there is, because awe is on the other side of it, but there's there's a trauma to powerful realizations that you can't forget. It burdens itself in you. And then if you look at like people who have gone through some sort of trauma, and it's like they're going in, then there's an inference to the to that sort of situation, and then all of a sudden their brain starts running it again, and then they're there, and they're like, phew, right? But it works in a positive motion too, because like that like it's the like the glory. You get an inference to the glory, and then all of a sudden you're like, poof! and like chances are, if you're having that, you've had a prior experience of like almost like complete emanation of it, right? And you've basked in it, and I think that's just as you approach novelty, hope and despair are like your two options. And so like I think it's a useful way of looking at it, I guess. Mm-hmm. I've been playing with it a lot.
Have you ever read The Body Keeps the Score?
No, but I have it.
Oh, okay. You'll because that gets into, you know what EMDR is?
I don't think so.
It's so I don't have a lot of people in my church, but one of the people in my church is a marriage and family therapist who does a lot of work with EMDR and trauma. EMDR looks like snake oil, but it's, you know, people really do it. It's like this light. It's like this strip of lights, and the lights go in a pattern, and that goes back and forth. And it's part of a treatment to trauma. You sit there and they have them look at the lights, and then the therapist starts asking them questions about the trauma, because trauma gets stuck in the brain somehow. And EMDR, with these lights and our eyes following these lights, our eye movement and the body keeps the score, talks about yoga and about other kinds of movement in order to, you know, undo the trauma, undo the stuckness that trauma has done. And I think you're right about, I mean, awe and terror, sort of like opening and closing. Trauma is almost something like when, you know, if I yell in this mic, it'll clip. And what that means is that the mic no longer has the capacity to be soft or to go loud and to grab the resonance. If I keep this camera on long enough, the camera might overheat, and trauma is sort of like bang. It's like a wire and a circuit breaker, that something has happened in the person's life, and the body says, nope, we're, you know, this happens with young children. Nope. We do not have the ability or the possibility of adequately processing. I mean, it's intense. It's incredibly smart. We cannot process this event right now. And so we are going to freeze it. And someday, maybe we will have the possibility to adequately process this event and, in fact, to get something good out of it. And this, to me, if you look at the Christian story, I mean, the big thing right now in terms of our cultural zeitgeist is we're dealing with suffering the way people deal with trauma. So, oh, there's suffering. And then it's either, you know, oh, let's make sure that there's no more suffering. But it's like, no, that's not very smart, because people need suffering in order to actually mature. So suffering is necessary, but suffering is suffering. So, and then the question is there redemption for suffering? And Christianity, right from the start, says yes. And Christianity basically says that God can do things with suffering that, and this gets tricky theologically, so I'll say it this way, that he doesn't do via other means. And this is profoundly important because, well, you know suffering. You know suffering because your parents split up and that brought in suffering. And you know suffering because you have a family history of depression. And you know, and you have this bit of terror behind you, that depression sometimes comes it's never comes at a convenient time, but you can have the rug pulled out of, let's say you're heading down the road in terms of a degree or a relationship or getting this dog, and suffering, like, it's almost like a hole opens up underneath and bang. And I've heard few people articulate this as well as you have in terms of, and you don't care, you know, it's a dark apathy. And it's also a hole. And, you know, okay, we've got SSRIs, we've got therapists, we've got exercise, we've got diet, we've got, you know, we've got some tools in our belt to deal with suffering, but it's still a hole. And it's not like a broken arm that, you know, they'll probably be able to set it, and, you know, a few months later, it'll probably heal right. And suffering, depression is way more difficult than a broken arm. And so there's this uncertainty. And so, and you know this, but again, as here's the thing, I know people who have not suffered much, and I know people who have suffered greatly. And sometimes their suffering makes them bitter and shallow, but sometimes their suffering makes them people of consequence and glory. And if you read Philippians 2 in the Bible, that's essentially what Philippians 2 says, that God, that Jesus is glorified because of the humiliation and the suffering and the voluntary aspect of it. And that what God is able to do through these hard means is more than we see him do without it. And so all of this kind of cheap, well, God should have, a better world would have been a world without suffering. Do you know that? Because I talk to plenty of people who, yeah, they sure don't say, oh, my suffering was great. But they do say that suffering was useful to make me into something I could not have been without it. And I deeply value and treasure that. So, you know, that's, and Christianity builds that into its story and builds it into its wisdom and builds it into its view of the world. Now, how to deploy it. So, sorry, you talk to a minister every now and then, you get a sermon.
That was great. I love that.
Okay. We're getting to the end of our time. Any other questions you wanted to hit me with?
I can, it's kind of big, but I can kind of throw it at you because I think it's really useful.
Okay.
Okay. So I've been reading How Emotions Are Made. It's by Lisa Feldman Barrett.
Okay.
And what she, like, she kind of, she's, she like, she gives a frame of like a classical view of emotions, and then she tries to add more nuance to it, I guess. And it's almost like directly related to the issue with words, is that she tried to find a fingerprint for emotions. So like this set of things happens when you're sad, angry, happy. So it's like the increased heart rate. She did like some tests with like visual interpretation, and if they didn't have context, they couldn't really guess the emotion. It was just kind of like a face. The concepts bleed together. They bleed together. The inferences overlap. So there's no like actual unique fingerprint for it. And she tried to like dive into it for your brain circuitry. Do we have like an angry thing? Do we have this? Do we have the emotions? And we don't really. They're concepts. We build the inferences from concepts. So like the like anger itself is like not like that's not it's not a real thing in some sense. It's a concept to put the emotional affect and past experiences and how to move forward in the world. And so we'll label that anger. And so what that kind of is, so like if you go to other cultures and you ask them what emotions are and how they affect them, they're going to have different words, different concepts, and even different bodily feelings, right? Some people, when they're sad, they might not cry, but they'll have a stomach ache in different cultures. Wow. So it doesn't nail down. And so like the thing that has been really dragging, has been pulling me through on that, is that like it's just like how much of a map we use, how and then the maps that we use are made off of inferences, because there's no fingerprint for this is this. It's like it's inferences all the way down, right? It would be like the relevance realization. Like it's the relevance realization. It's not the concept itself. So what the emotions have done is kind of thrown out the relevance realization, taken the concept, and then gone concepts all the way forward. But it's left a bunch of holes, because where are these concepts coming from? And they don't exist everywhere. So where's the, like there's an issue there. And then I think that with that, this is like a really deep point of like Peterson's pay attention.
See, now I can't rock and not think about it. I just started rocking. So go on. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Peterson's pay attention is that like, it's like pay attention to what you're doing, but like look at what concepts are you using to make sense of it. Pay attention to that. Which holes are you going for? Because oftentimes your arguments are built off of presuppositions. And what are your presuppositions? Because your on some level, when people are arguing, they're not arguing about the thing, they're arguing about the value of their presuppositions, and they're ignoring the thing that you need to be looking at. You need to pay attention to the thing and ignore your concepts. But it's like, well, how do you do that? And it's like, well, I only have this concept. And it's like, no, you have inferences, you have thousands, billions of inferences all the way down, and you need to start looking at the inferences and how those come together. And this is just like a thing that I've been recently been able to do, is like you stare into like a vacuum of inferences. It's like a picture, but it's not a picture. I'm not a very imagistic thinker, but you look at it and you see the interaction without the words, and then all of a sudden you can summarize the interaction in a more clear form. I think that's what pay attention, right? And so that's a rabbit hole I've been on, and I thought
that's a good rabbit hole. And again, you shared it really, really well. I'm glad you're on the Discord. I think you're going to find, I think you're going to find some people wanting to pigeonhole you now and go into some of these pigeonholes. So, or rabbit holes, rabbit trails. So no, that's really cool. And I just, you know, while you're talking, I bought the book.
That
fast. It's like,
it's a great book. It's a great book.
Well, that sounds really cool.
Yeah.
Sounds really cool. And wow. Maybe wow. And you laid it out really well. You laid it out really well. You've got some gifts, and I think those gifts are going to be used. And I'm impressed. That was really good. I don't know enough about this to say much, but you laid it out really well, and I'm going to have to think about it. You got me rocking. You got me rocking, baby.
Yo.
I started rocking. It's like, oh, dang it. I'm doing it. Nobody ever nobody ever pointed that out to me before. Now I got to see myself rocking.
Well, it's okay. That's how you dig deeper, right?
That is how I dig deeper. Yeah. That's at least that's what I think I'm doing. You know, and maybe I want to suck my thumb too. I don't know.
Might help.
I don't know. I'll have to ask my mother if I was a thumb sucker or not. I don't think so. I know my sister was. I had some kids that weren't. And they say, now I'm going down my own rabbit trail. That's horrible. Okay, I'll stop rabbit trailing. And I want to thank you. I want to thank you for. And I want to ask if, because I mean, often depending on the conversation, I'll tell people. In fact, sometimes I will strongly encourage people. You check this out with, especially if they mention somebody else, you let them watch this video first before you give me the green light. But is this something that you'd like me to share?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good. Because I think the Discord's gonna eat this thing up with a spoon. And perfect. And I think people are gonna want to talk to you because this is really cool. This is really cool. So good. I'm glad you found a slot.
And, yeah, me too.
I know they're hard to find.
Well, about like a year ago, I was on the Discord and I'd kind of left. I wasn't ready for a community in some sense. Yeah. And but like I was looking for a slot like for like 6 months and I couldn't find one.
Yeah. And, I'm sorry about that.
No. It's I didn't even have anything to talk about, right? I had to think about that. So it was good. I really, really, really appreciate everything that you do.
Oh, thank you.
Just like and not even what you do, but like the character that you have and as you bring forth and like the warmth in your eyes and your smile and how you make people like you try to understand people and I appreciate it. I find it inspiring and thank you.
Well, thank you. That means a lot. So I'm definitely going to share this. Probably see the problem I have is after a conversation like this, it's like, I want to share it right away. It's like, I should probably hold off a day or two. It's good. Cause if I pile them up on top of each other, they don't get the attention they deserve.
Right.
Because a conversation like this deserves to be heard. And that's, you know, that's something that I feel for the Randos channel, because there's a, I'll say it this way. There's an injustice in the universe where so much of what's valuable isn't valued. And again, that's part of the reason I'm a Christian is because I believe that there will come a day that all that is valuable will be valued properly. And I think, and from what we've seen of human history, this world does not afford that. But that's why I believe in a God that will make that right. So anyway, so thank you. And I will see you on the Discord.
Perfect.
Take care.
Have a great day.
You too.